Is it going to be difficult for the president to convince his own party to take action?
It might. And he's in the unenviable position of having to do that, as well as Republicans who, for political reasons, are not interested in retaliatory strikes as well. And so he might be surprised the way Prime Minister Cameron was in the UK yesterday, that he may not get the kind of support that he wants. It would be nice for the president to have that support. That is the way things should be done. That said, it's not entirely clear that he needs that support to actually go ahead with strikes against the Syrian regime.
Is it the specter of Iraq that's really making, you know, both Britain and here at home, making it difficult for people to get behind the idea of a strike in Syria?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. But more needs to be said about that. It's not just the specter of Iraq that's scaring people off. It's the specter of a full-scale boots-on-the-ground war in Syria that would seemingly lead to the same kind of fiasco that occurred in Iraq. And I think the problem here, and where the Obama administration could actually be making more of an effort, is to show that there are other military models that could be invoked that have worked in the past to show that the U.S. could get involved militarily without it sort of via a slippery slope descending into a full-scale boots-on-the-ground military campaign in Syria. And here I'm thinking of a couple of examples. One would be the Clinton approach during the 1990s, in which cruise missiles were used both against al-Qaeda in Afghanistan before 9/11, as well as the Kosovo campaign, of course, where there was an extended air campaign. The other example comes from the Reagan administration, and that, of course, is the Iran-Iraq tanker war in the 1986-87-88, when the U.S. Navy was engaged with the Iranian Navy and successfully over 2 years sort of kept it at bay from attacking U.S.-flagged Kuwaiti tankers that was getting oil out to the world markets. And in that case, the United States did not get involved in an all-out war with Iran. So it is possible for the United States military to engage without going 100% all in.
Well, and
that case is not being made, I think, to the public. And so rightly, of course, they're concerned that it's going to be a slippery slope and the United States will get into a horrific conflict.
And on that note, I mean, why respond now to a chemical weapons attack when thousands of people have been killed by the Assad regime, you know, with bullets and bombs over the last 2 years?
Right. So it's a good question, and it's a fair question. And there are those out there, John Mearsheimer at the University of Chicago, for instance, a known and reputable scholar on U.S. strategy and related issues, have said that, in fact, there isn't any difference here, and that the very notion of chemical weapons is something, as a weapon of mass destruction, is a misnomer. And, in fact, there's much more similarity between that and ordinary lead, if you will, bullets and mortars than there is with, say, nuclear weapons, which he puts in categorically in a different kind of category, right? But I think there are this is a fair point to be made, but I think there are other responses. And the first of all is that chemical weapons do fall into a different category than lead, and they are outlawed by a number of international laws and sanctions. Those of which the Syrian regime, by the way, the Syrian government, have actually signed. So they are in violation of international law. And so this isn't strictly a humanitarian argument, sort of liberal interventionist kind of argument to help people who've been killed or who are suffering. It is that, but there's much more to it. And I think, again, the Obama administration could be making this more clear. And that is that they're in violation of international norms. And, in fact, the president did say that in his interview with the PBS NewsHour a couple of evenings ago. So there's something that there has to be a response, because this is a categorically different kind of attack.
It doesn't appear, though, that it's really going to be an international response, since the UN Security Council is really being blocked by Russia's support of Syria and, you know, Britain has, the parliament there has said no, they're not going to be helping the United States in Syria. So who could we expect would help us?
Well, this is also a fair point, right? So how do you get a kind of multilateral justification for a U.S.-led or U.S.-led coalition attack on Syria? And, of course, the standard model is to go through the United Nations. But as you pointed out, it's likely that the Russians and the Chinese will veto any type of attempt to get a Security Council resolution. And although the British had put one forward the other day, we now know with the in the vote in the House of Commons and Cameron's Prime Minister Cameron's that he's going to honor that vote, that the UK seems to be out. That said, there are again there are other forms of multilateral action that are justified, and again for which there are historical precedent. So typically here we, you know, one hears the sort of phrase coalition of the willing, which given the history of the Iraq War is unfortunate. But again, there are several times in which nations can come together under the guise of protecting international law, which they do not have to go through the UN, and their actions can be justified. So who would that be? Well, obviously the French are going to be the next, after the UK or the Americans' most important ally, and are going to step up. And they should, because it is their former mandate, Syria. And they have an obligation. And I think their fairly decent response in Mali, to which I was quite surprised about, but the fact that they did a pretty good job in Mali suggests that they could do a good job again here. The Australians are actually beating the drums the loudest, and would also be part of that. But I think what you'd see is a number of standard members from NATO, minus the UK. Certainly Turkey's going to be on board. So there is a way to get any number of countries behind a U.S. support here without getting the U.N. involved, but that would still be justified for multilateral action.
And here at home, if Congress does not support the idea of a strike, what would the next step be?
Well, the next step, I mean, any number of different things could happen. It really depends on how much executive power the president wants to invoke. There's plenty of historical precedent and probably enough legal rules on his side to justify him being able to do this without congressional authority. I mean, he certainly has up to 60 days to take military action without actually declaring war. I believe it's 60. But he has 30 to 60 days, I think. So he could take an action. The problem is more of the political fallout. Because the real issue here is not whether the U.S. should or a U.S.-backed coalition should strike Syria. Of course they should. Syria has now just violated international law too many times. They have crossed Obama's red line, and he is obligated to do that. The problem, of course, is that it's not going to deter – it's not likely to deter – the Syrian regime from using these weapons again. It's also not likely to deter other supposed belligerent nations like Iran or North Korea from using other kinds of weapons of mass destruction. And it's not even clear how much U.S. credibility it will restore. But doing nothing is even worse than at least firing some missiles, which may not change the situation on the ground. The real question is what comes next, and that's the conversation that's probably going on in the White House right now, and what President Obama probably does not want to face, because he, of course, he wants his legacy to be getting the U.S. out of two wars, right, and not the possibility of a slippery slope into a third.
This conflict looks like it could go on for years and years.
The conflict, regardless of whether the U.S. retaliates or not right now or does it two or three times, I think is going to go on for many, many years. This is a civil war with, as far as I can tell, no happy ending. There's always the outside chance of something drastic happening, such as somehow Assad being killed. But it's not clear how much he's really in control at this point. But this really invokes what is probably the most important reason for Americans to reflect in a somber way about why strikes are necessary. And that's the sort of fourth unstated reason that we haven't talked about. And that is most of the effective fighting groups on the ground, the rebel groups fighting the Assad regime, are now either indirectly or directly affiliated with Al-Qaeda. And if, even though Al-Qaeda Central has been severely degraded and it is itself not much of a threat anymore, most of these regional Al-Qaeda groups are. And their modus operandi, going way back to the founding of Al-Qaeda, has been to insert themselves into civil wars. Bosnia was an example, but there are many others, Chechnya and so forth, and try to co-opt those causes into jihadist ones. And that is clearly what's happening here in Syria. And if those groups are successful and can get their hands on any number of depots where there are chemical weapons, well, then the United States security is very much under threat. And I think then the president has everything he needs, right, to try to stop these groups. The question then is, how is that going to be done? And that's what I meant before of that's the conversation the president doesn't want to have.
Well, it seems like an impossible situation. You certainly don't want to see someone like Assad, squashing civilians. And at the same time, if the rebels were to be successful, then what does that mean?
Right. Exactly. Well, it means I think the U.S.'s concern is not so much with the outcome of the civil war in terms of either side that wins, although clearly it has expressed preference for the fall of the Assad regime. But now that the Free Syrian Army rebel forces are largely, or there's large pockets of them anyway, that are Al-Qaeda affiliated, one doesn't want to root for that side either, as it were. It is a civil war, and I think that at one level, the Obama administration has been correct to stay out of it. But the nature of this conflict is changing with the introduction of chemical weapons, both for humanitarian and international reasons, as I've suggested, as well as the issue of credibility, but particularly for national security interests at home or American interests abroad. And so that makes this much more connected to the global war on terrorism, a phrase the Obama administration doesn't use anymore, but which he has shown himself to be more hawkish on with drone strikes and the use of special forces. So the question really remains is, once the Obama administration has, and Obama and his advisors have the discussion about what's to be done next, which Obama will we see? Will we see the one who has stayed out of Syria for 2 years, or will we see the one who's willing, usually through clandestine operations, drones and special forces, to actually do something more? And that's a huge question. I don't think the U.S. can sit out on this anymore, though.